you. Welcome back to Tide Smart Global. Boy, we went a long way to get to that line, taking care of business, didn't we?
We did.
Who did the song selection this time?
Shani
McShani?
I selected, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
But I selected Where We Started.
A lot of instrumental.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we're taking care of business today with our very special guest, Donna Brasarge, who is the publisher of the number one business journal here in Maine, Maine Biz. Welcome, Donna.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Of course, I think anyone involved with business is familiar with Maine Biz, but I think the areas that you cover affects everyone in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage everyone to, not while you're listening to the show, because this airs on Saturday, so most of our listeners are on their way to Home Depot or Lowe's when they hear the show.
Apparently.
So I don't want people to swerve off the road and try to like go to their Apple iPhone or something, but mainbiz.biz, and also on Twitter, Maine Biz, and you can find everything out about them. But before we get into the state of the state with Maine business, I would love to start with the early years of, I know, you don't get this a lot, but I want context. You are, as the publisher of Maine Biz,
yes,
you have this this awesome responsibility, and maybe it's a burden sometimes,
uh-huh,
to accurately reflect the state of the state of what's happening in Maine Biz. And I'm always fascinated from what lens you approach it in terms of where you grew up and went to school and how you got involved in
mm-hmm.
media and publishing. And then we'll get into the nitty-gritty. We've got to talk about Star Trek, which we talked about going into the intro. We'll talk about other things. But just talk about where you grew up and went to school, and then we'll talk about how you ended up coming here to Maine.
Well, I'm a New England girl, moved around quite a bit in New England, went to St. Lawrence University, where I started out as an English-German major, double major, which...
English-German.
Yeah, English and a German double major.
You want to hear something funny? I was thinking about that the other day. When I grew up, which is, you know, I think longer ago than when you grew up, German was elevated relative to the language hierarchy.
Yeah.
There was French... Spanish
and German.
And German.
Yeah.
But in the last couple of decades, German has dropped off.
Yeah, totally has. Totally has.
Yeah. You probably don't even remember German now.
I don't. I find papers that I've written in German that I have no idea what they say.
That's so
funny. I can pick out a word here or there, but no clue.
I've been telling my kids for the last few years, like my daughter takes Spanish and Zach, my youngest son, it takes Latin. You know, he's fond of the dead languages. I don't know why.
And Greek, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. But I mean, you know, they're, you know, the root meaning. But I'm like, hey, how about you guys think, have you ever thought about Chinese? And they're like, what? How do you, we can't even draw the symbols, right?
Know.
So we have this bias about,
yes,
you know, cultural,
yes,
bias about other, yeah, languages and countries.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, well, you look at all the charts and you look at what's happening with China. And, you know, if you're fluent or have some understanding with China, there may be a real business application in 10 years. No luck. So you studied English and German.
Right. And then after 2 years, I was like, this isn't working for me. It's two literature majors, and my eyes were going crossed. So I switched to journalism. And so I was a journalism major, and I did two really amazing internships while I was at St. Lawrence, one at the Ladies Home Journal and one at the New Yorker.
Wow.
And the Ladies Home Journal one was in the editorial department, and at the New Yorker, I was with an ad sales rep, which was a complete eye-opening experience. Go around asking people for money. It was just a whole new thing that we had never been trained in college, right?
Right.
So when I graduated, I went straight to New York and got a job at a magazine called Quest, which no longer exists. But it was all about – it competed with like Harper's, Atlantic, Saturday Evening Post, that kind of highbrow sort of magazine. Went from there to Better Homes and Gardens and went from there to Country Journal, Early American Life. And then I had a kid and said, I can't do this lifestyle. So moved back to New England and got a job at a local regional business publication in Worcester, Massachusetts. And that's where sort of I stayed. It was great. It was doing the same thing, but on a smaller scale. And I've been involved in publishing ever since. Moved my way up in Worcester Business Journal. And then when we bought Maine Biz, came here in 1999.
Well, I definitely want to talk about Maine Biz. We have Donna Brasarge here, who's the publisher of Maine Biz. Talk about your time in New York a little bit in the publishing industry, which I think is fascinating because
from when you started
to now.
Yeah, so different.
The world
so
has different. Changed. Digital has changed. But,
right.
But those books that you refer to.
They were the Bibles for people. I mean,
they were Bibles. bills, and they were huge.
Huge.
And literally and figuratively, there was mass to them. So when you read
huge
a magazine
mass.
Like that, and the whole industry, I think the industry continues to struggle on how to, same thing with daily papers, how to live in an information age and how to monetize all the investment that magazines and newspapers have to make when we have a culture that gets perpetuated with young people that suggest everything should be free. So I can go online and get my information mm-hmm. free, and if you dare to charge me, mm. then you are breaking some sacred covenant mm-hmm. on the new world internet mm-hmm. where I should be able to find out how to make shrimp tapioca pancakes for free.
Exactly.
Don't you dare charge me.
Exactly.
But someone has to make money to provide resources
yes.
for this stuff. So talk about your early years in publishing and what that felt like. And then we'll talk a little bit about the digital age. And then we'll talk about Main Biz.
I was in New York in the 80s and publishing in the 80s. And that was pre-internet. And people did pay for their magazines and their newspapers. And that's how they got their information. And they looked forward to getting those magazines and newspapers, to getting that information. And those books were thick. Tons, millions and millions of advertising revenue. I remember at the time, at the Better Homes and Gardens, a full page ad was $35,000 for a full page ad. And that, wow. you know, that to me seemed like a lot of money. That's for one page. And when I first started out, I was selling the little direct response ads, and, you know, in the back of the book. And, you know, I was still generating $500,000 with that stuff, you know, and it was just mind boggling. And there, page after page, and the content. And I think one thing that Better Homes and Gardens did well, which is sort of the precursor to what we do now in terms of diversifying their products, they're, you know, part of Meredith Corporation. So if you read an article in Better Homes and Gardens about, you know, how to bake a cake, then they're going to take that same article and they're going to create a magazine called Cooking and Baking Ideas. And they're going to compile all that into a newsstand publication. And then they're going to take that same recipe and put it in a cookbook. And
right.
sell you cookbooks. So they really had, you know, were the precursor to this sort of using content to access the audience in different ways and to generate revenue in different ways with one cost of buying that content initially. So that's sort of a precursor to what we all are kind of doing now.
Yeah. It that impacts not only the business of publishing in all different levels, mm-hmm. but also the element of journalism, which I want to get your mm-hmm. thoughts on, because you've seen a huge kind of land shift from, you know, I've always had great respect for journalism, whether it's television mm-hmm. and 60 Minutes. Like, you know, if Morley Schaefer or any of those guys in 60, you know, coming up tonight, we're going to cover, you know, the Panama Canal or something, you would watch and go, that's, you know, the absolute truth. They've done real
yes.
journalism here.
Yes.
Same thing with different publications. You know, I grew up outside of Boston. The Boston Globe said something, and it was like there was a credibility that was assumed and accepted
right.
by readers. Same thing with major magazines. And now we're at a point where every single person either feels as though or operates as though they have journalistic credentials to tweet, to Facebook,
yes.
to give out information. And it's harder and harder for the public to separate.
There
what's journalism and what's, you know, mm-hmm. you know, Larry, Moe, and Curly, you know, having an opinion.
Well, frankly, that's one of the reasons why I think that print is going to remain strong, and especially in our industry, it has remained strong because of the credibility of print versus what's online. People don't tend to believe what they read online. If they're, you know, have half a brain, they get that, you know, it's, I mean, look at The Onion. I mean, it's all sort of subject to a very critical look, whereas print still maintains a level of credibility. People still believe it. There's still an investment there. Still, people are still paying for print. And so there's a little bit more, publishers are a little more willing to invest if they're paying for print. But, you know, in terms of the economies of publishing, it's all about making money. And if you don't have the audience, you can't sell the advertising to pay for things. And how do you get the audience? And how do you prove that you have audience? And so it's sort of like, you know, I sort of think of like it's a car dealership. You spend the most money trying to bring somebody in to buy your cheapest car.
Right.
And just because you want more bodies, as opposed to spending a little bit more money to get a higher end client that's going to buy a more expensive car. And so I think that there's a struggle now. You know, I know that newspapers are trying to push their online traffic higher and higher and higher and higher in order to get the ad revenues that they're getting. And that's a definitely a push and pull with journalism, for journalists who want to do reliable, credible, long-term reporting versus, you know, man bites dog.
Did you ever watch the Newsroom that was on HBO? It was a show, Aaron Sorkin's show.
I haven't, but that's on my list. I got to get through Dexter first, and then I'll go to the Newsroom.
Wait a sec. You're still on Dexter?
I'm still on Dexter, yeah. Sorry, I'm a little behind.
Do you have a rotary phone? What is going on with you? You're supposed to be on the cutting edge of media, and what's going on?
Yeah, I did House of Cards, but Dexter's I'm a little late on.
Oh, wow.
Don't tell me the end.
On which? Dexter or House of Cards? Something bad happens in both of them.
I would think so. I've seen House of Cards. House of Cards, I'm caught up. Game of Thrones, I'm caught up. Dexter, I'm not so much.
Yeah, something bad happens.
I assume so.
Yeah, Dexter isn't much of a relationship guy.
No.
Oh, by the way, you mentioned something about The Onion. You were talking about journalism.
Yeah.
Just before we went on, Deb and I were talking, and she uses the National Enquirer as a reference material. You're a professional journalist publisher, and you've been in this. Anything you could say, I was trying to explain to her that it's in the fiction section. She was trying to explain to me about some sort of alien thing as, Deb, do you want to defend yourself? Do you even want to try?
No, absolutely
not.
It's urban legends. They're full of urban legends.
See, and I didn't even think people could subscribe. Deb subscribes.
I
thought it was an impulse purchase when you were in the checkout line.
You don't want to miss your copy. Somebody's got to keep an eye on that stuff for us.
Yeah, something else is happening. By the way, we have our very special guest, Donna Broussard here, publisher of Maine Biz. You're listening to News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, WLOBradio.com. So we've got to get on backtrack. We got to get back on track here.
Yep.
So you were in Worcester.
Yes.
Going to shows at the Spectrum and, you know, enjoying.
The Centrum. It was the Centrum.
Oh, the Spectrum, the Centrum. That's right. I should know. I grew up in Boston, but I could never get that far out to the West.
Because it's like a whole 40 minutes. Yeah.
I was just kind of a homebody. I still am.
I know.
But you.
Are you from Rhode Island, maybe?
No, from Needham, Mass. From, you know, just in the shadow of Boston, right next to Wellesley College.
Yep.
Yeah, very close. I've talked about it on the air before. I tried to visit Wellesley College a number of times, and I was always turned away at the gate.
Oh.
Yeah. So we'll cover that later. But Worcester, home of Holy Cross, right?
Yes, Holy Cross. Well, there's many colleges in Worcester. Holy Cross, Assumption, Worcester Polytech, Anna Maria, Nichols. There's a lot of colleges in the Worcester area. Very Clark University.
Yeah.
Very, very big collegiate town.
It's a beautiful town to drive through. And I just drove through it on my way to Connecticut, right? Was it 84? 290 something? You drive through and, you know, the road curves and all of a sudden you see Holy Cross up on the hill.
Yep, and you're done.
You're kind of happy to be on the other side.
There you go.
So how did you end up going from Worcester up here? Was the newspaper group bought? Did you
yes.
say Maine Biz?
So I was part of a group. I still am part of a newspaper group. We had a Hartford Business Journal in Hartford. We had the Worcester Business Journal in Worcester. We knew we were doing this Business Journal thing really well. And Jonathan Whitney, who had literally started Maine Biz on his dining room table in 1998, realized that he had bitten off more than he can chew. He couldn't really take it on and was shopping it around. And it fit our mission. It fit what we did really well. We did some due diligence and we said, hey, we're going to buy this and we're going to do Maine Biz. So I came up to Maine in 99 to run Maine Biz. And at the time, it was monthly. It was just the paper, monthly. It even though it was called Maine Biz, the distribution was essentially Greater Portland. And took it on. We saw the potential. And
so you started your role under the darkness of a big lie. It wasn't Maine Biz. It was Portland Biz.
It was essentially, yeah.
Essentially.
He had great hopes. He had aspirations.
Yeah. In publishing, much like marketing, sometimes hyperbole. Sometimes
you start with the idea first, and then you make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess
start with the end in mind.
It would be harsh to call it the big lie. It was Portland Biz. It wasn't Maine Biz.
Well, Portland was in Maine.
Yes, exactly. Well played.
Well, there you go.
You know, if it doesn't work out at Maine Biz, you could join a marketing firm, you know, that whole rational justification
sure.
thing.
Sure.
So as we talk about Maine Biz, why don't you, for listeners that may not be familiar, talk about what is the editorial or the positioning or the mission for Maine Biz relative to what you cover in the scope of what you cover. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I think it's a little self-explanatory, but there's also some nuance on what is Maine Biz as a publication. And what is your scope of coverage and what's your kind of mission to, to deliver information to readers?
Well, our mission is to help businesses in Maine be successful. That's our mission. And we do that by providing them with information, whether it's data or trend information, articles about stuff that they need to know. And when we look at stories, we're always looking at it from a perspective of, I am running a business in Maine. Do I care about this? And if I care about this, why should I care? What does it mean to me? And so that's how we sort of approach everything that's sort of thrown at us. That's how we look for stories. And one of our goals is to surprise and delight our readers. I think one of the reasons why that Maine Biz and other regional business publications across the country have been as successful as they are versus, say, daily newspapers is because we have maintained our local business coverage. It's not wire service stuff. It's totally unique. And we're always looking for the story about businesses in Maine, things that affect businesses in Maine, things that have to do with businesses in Maine. And that's what we're constantly on the lookout for statewide.
But you're based here in the Portland area.
Yes.
And so that relative to covering the state, you have reporters and you have journalists that are the reporters assigned by category of business or by geography?
Neither. They're assigned as the stories come in terms of their workload. But we also use a series of freelancers across the state. So people are, you know, pitching stories to us. Obviously, publicity people are pitching stories to us. And a few years ago, we realized that it's a big honking state to cover. And we started this On the Road with Maine Biz series of events where we pick six cities or towns every year. And we go out and visit them. And prior to a, you know, cocktail networking reception, the editorial team does a focus group where they bring in 8 to 12 local business leaders and grill them about what's going on in this area and what's happening and what should we be writing about. So we're always asking our audience, what do they need to know about what's happening? So that's the challenge that we have on a day-to-day basis is finding that out.
I've never been grilled.
Well, you're an unknown company sitting here in Maine.
Do not say that out loud.
Sorry.
If
nobody knows about you.
If our three or four listeners
start
spreading that around.
That could go viral.
Before you know it, there's a dozen people that are
My goodness.
I know.
There'll be five people trying to bang down the door.
Yeah, we get that a lot. We'll have to alert security. We have Donna Broussard here. And is the eminent business leadership guru. And formerly she goes by publisher of Maine Biz, but her friends refer to her as the eminent business leader guru. Is that true?
Or no.
Did I just make that up?
You just made that up.
Yeah, you're far too humble. For people listening.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about you're the publisher of Maine Biz.
Yes.
And I think for people that maybe outside the industry assume that everyone who works at, whether it's a daily newspaper or magazine, everyone kind of has the same role. But publisher typically is more on the business side, on the sales side, and then the editorial side is more pure journalism.
Right.
And most reputable magazines and newspapers, which certainly Maine Biz is, tries to keep a Chinese wall or some sort of wall in between so that commerce does not influence journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So if you talk a little bit about your role as publisher of Maine Biz and versus we've had Peter Van Allen here before and as the editor.
Yep.
And talk about how that works.
Well, I always tell people I use an analogy, a metaphor. Which is that
if you use like or as, you can make it into a simile.
There
too.
You go. So it's like I was the producer of a movie. I'm the producer. Peter, as the editor, would be the director. And so, as the publisher or the producer of this publication, my job is to provide direction. My job is to generate revenue, pay the bills, and make sure everybody is who's, you know, and here's another analogy. If everybody's got, if I have a bus, you know, the bus of Maine Biz, is everybody in the right seat on the bus? Is everybody doing what they're supposed to be doing
on the
bus?
Is the bus going in the right
direction? Is the bus going in the right direction? Do we have gas? Do we have the good directions? You know, all that good stuff. So that's my role, is to sort of bring it together. A lot of my time is spent with managing the sales and revenue generation part of the business. It is. I do try to. My belief is that if I have a great editor and the editorial team gets what we do and understands what our goals are, then I don't need to step in very often
into the bus.
Yes.
Oh, have we left the analogy? Please let me know.
I don't need to get my fingers in the pie too much in terms of what they're doing editorially. So I am allowed to leave them alone. We do believe in editorial credibility. You know, one of our challenges is that we're writing about the people that are advertising with us, because we are B2B. And so we have to be really careful. If we are writing an article about ABC Company and ABC Company is an advertiser, we can't let the ad run anywhere near the article. And people will say, well, I advertise a lot. You should write about me. And we go, yeah, that's not really the way we decide how to write articles. And so we do get some pressure from people. We have to remind people that we are not a Chamber of Commerce newsletter. This is, you know, real journalism, and it's in their best interest for us to keep it pure and credible. And they get it in the long run, so yeah. It's good.
And I'm looking at the masthead, and so you guys are part of New England Business Media,
correct?
And so how big of a group is that? Does that group specialize in business journals?
Yes. So we own the Worcester Business Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts, and we own the Hartford Business Journal in Hartford, Connecticut. And so the three divisions operate independently. They're centralized, as you know, we have billing is centralized, and that's about it, really. IT is centralized. But we're all sort of doing the same thing. We belong to a national organization of business publications called the Alliance of Area Business Publications, AABP. And there's about 75 members everywhere from, you know, Crain's Chicago, Crain's New York, Los Angeles Business Journal, Central Penn Business Journal. I mean, large and small, Mississippi, Arkansas. Most cities, large cities and states or large regions, have some sort of business publication. And so we are friends with all of them.
Well, we want to be friends, too. So after this interview, you can link to them and say, I did an interview and I mentioned all of you.
There you go.
And then they can spread the word.
They can.
That's
but
how this...
I thought you wanted to be quiet and unassuming.
Oh, God, we really struggle with that, don't we, Shani? Don't we struggle a little bit?
A little.
Yeah, there are times, and I will betray this one confidence that Donna shared with me as we were walking around the campus before coming on the air. She's like, "Hey, you guys are kind of unknown." And it's like, in a business sense, I think it's been a self-exiled witness protection program.
There you go.
That we are the equivalent of, only because most of our business all occurs outside of Maine. And mm-hmm. we love being in Maine. Mm-hmm. So our business is here. Our employees are here. We pay a incredible amount of taxes here, and because Maine is beautiful, mm-hmm. but virtually all of our business is outside of Maine, and we're spending so much time, what we like to call, it's a quaint little phrase, I don't want to take credit for it, because I'm sure there's other people out there who will say, hey, I came up with it, but we like to call it economic development. Mm-hmm. It's a little thing. Economic development.
Such a concept.
It is such a concept. And it is very rare for it to be discussed here, I mean. It is kind of the unicorn mm-hmm. of Maine politics, of Maine media, of Maine commentary. The whole idea of talking about economic development, we focus a lot of our time, really the bulk of our time, the last couple of months, 3 months, I've been from Amsterdam to Paris to San Francisco to L.A. to St. Louis to Minneapolis, New York, where else was I? Kind of a bunch of places, like, you know, travel 100 days a year. Mm-hmm. The problem is we have kind of a weak economic engine here in Maine. And in order to, in my opinion, in order to really have meaningful economic expansion, we need to look for opportunities to bring outside capital and investment in the state. Mm-hmm. That investment drives employment and jobs. That helps with infrastructure. But in order to do that, you got to kind of go outside the state. And when we have all these meetings every other week where we sit in hotel conference rooms with a bunch of well-intentioned people talking about economic development, the only development that is developed is with the hotel catering department. That's a category. Main Biz should do a category on economic development and show all the hotels who make money on catering for the economic development meetings.
And that's an interesting idea.
That would be, see, we can come up with ideas all day long.
Well, we actually have an idea coming up that addresses what you just said. Every year we do a thing called the Fact Book, which is stats and statistics and facts about the marketplace. This year we're sort of turning it on its head a little bit. We're calling it sort of Fact Book on steroids. And it's called Fact Book Doing Business in Maine. And we are taking the data. We've talked to a couple of the Maine Company guys, Peter Del Greco at Maine Company. We've talked to Janine over at the Maine International Trade Center. And it's like, well, if businesses want to come here or do business here, what do they want to know? And so we're adding and changing up some of the content of the Fact Book Doing Business in Maine. And we're expanding our circulation outside of Maine.
Whoa.
And we are working with some of the economic development organizations, you know, the seven economic development areas or regions or whatever you want to call them, and they're all the different names in Maine, to find out who are you targeting, you know, and, you know, who are the best prospects for learning about how do you do business in Maine. And so that's going to be a new thing we're working on. It's coming out in July. You'll be seeing more about that. And we'll be marketing it in Maine Biz and on mainbiz.biz. But I agree with you. You know, economic growth has got to come in both places. And businesses in Maine can benefit from other businesses coming in and providing services to them as well. And so I think that it's a win-win for everybody if we do something like that. And so we are listening. We are hearing what people are saying. We're hearing things like what you said. And we want to figure out a way to help that, make that happen. So. Right. Fact Book Doing Business in Maine.
We've got Donna Broussard as the publisher of Maine Biz. Is it time yet, Deb?
Oh, sure.
It's time for the for the ambush journalism?
Okay, yeah.
Go for it.
Definitely. Definitely.
Okay, yeah. We usually like to wait until the middle of the interview, so it really makes the guest uncomfortable.
Okay,
you can't just get up at this point. Otherwise, it's... okay, here's the ambush journalism.
Go
right,
for it.
Right here, I've got your NSA file. I've got everything. Let me make sure I've got everything teed up. Now, I'm kidding about the ambush part, but I do want to get your perspective on my main business theory.
Okay.
And as the publisher of the, I don't think there's other magazines or newspapers in Maine dedicated to business.
Not
I know I know dailies cover you know business stories.
They have come and gone over the last 15 years.
So you are the number one biz public. You're number 10. You're number one.
We're everything. We're it.
You are the pie of business journalism in that your number goes on into affinity, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So here's my theory. And Deb and Shani McShani, they've heard this for years, okay?
Okay.
And you mentioned earlier Charlie Kogan, who I think is the recently retired economist from USM. And if you read most newspaper stories in Maine over the last decade or two, we've only had one economist because he was kind of the go-to guy, right?
We have several, but okay.
We have several, but it's almost like how many ventriloquists are there in the world? There's that one guy with Charlie. And then
right.
So there's, you know, there's certain categories of life where I think we can only handle one of something. Mm-hmm. So Charlie Kogan was it, and nature abhors a vacuum, so there may be another guy popping up. Here is my theory, and I'm asking you in all seriousness to weigh in. And if you validate it and agree with it, fantastic. We will move forward. if not, we will stop and we will work through it to whatever point we need to.
Bring it on.
Okay. We spend so much time here in Maine, both in newspapers, magazines, day-to-day conversation, municipal government, county, state government, the knuckleheads in our state legislature. We spend so many time talking about this issue of Maine's economy and how it applies and what the barriers are and whether it's taxation or whether it's infrastructure cost, that I don't think anyone in Maine ever, ever gets it right. And here is my theory, okay? And Shani and Deb, if you want to jump in, this is, I was going to say Gladdy Knight and the Pips. This is when the Pips normally go in and go,
Yep.
So if you want, at any point is what I'm saying, or, you know, Tony Orlando and Don, I don't even know what the right thing is, but whatever. Okay. At any point you want to kind of, Okay. It's nobody's fault. That is the foundation principle of everything I'm going to say that follows, because we spend so much time wanting to blame people. And we engage in this sport of something's wrong, our economy's hurting, people are unemployed, a timber mill closed, the plant, the paper mill closed. It is somebody's fault. Somebody failed us. Somebody failed me. I'm unemployed because of this. I'm paying high taxes because of Governor LePage or Governor Baldacci or 20. There's always, here's my whole thing. Maine was settled over a couple hundred years ago. We're in New England. We were one of the first settled states because, you know, the pilgrims, they kind of, and then you had the country founded 238 years ago. People kind of moved to Maine. There were some Indians here, obviously, and I'm sure the early settlers were guilty of, you know, settlement issues with the Indians, and so that's a whole nother show. But Maine has about 35,000 square miles. Big state. The other New England states could fit in. Again, nobody's – it's about physics and time. We're going to get to Star Trek, too. So it's about time and space, not necessarily dilithium crystals, but it's about time and space and physics. We have a really big state. We settled it over hundreds of years ago, long before we knew about roadways or asphalt or fiber optics or planes, trains, automobiles. So we settled it as a natural resource economy where there's rivers and streams and then textiles and then there's timber and hunting. So we spread out all across the state and we form these towns and cities and these little groups we call municipalities, and there's 488. And so we're all, we've got about, we ended up with about 1.3 million people. And it wasn't very thoughtfully settled because 200 years ago, trade areas were only a few miles wide. It'd be like you, me, Shanny, Deb. This is where you guys go in and go, huh? We decide, hey, we're going to go live in this little town, and I'm going to raise cows and chickens, and you're going to work the timber, and Shanny's going to teach the kids in the schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. And so our economy was resource-based and community-based. And then over the last few hundred years, we get a little bit bigger. And all of a sudden, you know, somebody figured out, hey, we got wagons, we got horses. Let's put the horses and the wagons together. We go a little bit further. Then the automotive age happened, and then the industrial age. And so we've struggled through it, and we've had wood mills, and we've used hydropower. But where we've ended up in 2015 is a huge state with people spread inefficiently all over, and the numbers don't work. And in the new economy, which isn't about policy and it isn't about people doing the wrong thing, it is about the law of new economy. It's like energy. Capital in new economy goes to the path of least resistance, like water and energy. And here in Maine, we have too much infrastructure. We have people spread out. And the more time we spend trying to figure out about administrative consolidation or blaming people, we fail. Because in the new economy, every mile you put between a person, man, woman, child, and core services, healthcare, education, jobs, economic viability, every mile you add inefficiency. And so the reason we can't get capital to come into the state is because we're wildly inefficient. And we have, I wrote a an op-ed piece, Shanny, I wrote an op-ed piece a couple of years ago for the BDN, and I suggested that out of the 488 municipalities, we had about 108 that were insolvent. Again, nobody's fault. Everyone wants to, like, it's this politician, it's this politician. And my point was, for many of those municipalities, not all, but many of them, their economies aren't coming back. The timber mill isn't coming back. This isn't coming back. And they are further away from real healthcare solutions that are meaningful and exceptional education. And we don't acknowledge that because politically, our politicians, the people I've failed to become, they say to their constituents, elect me. If you elect me, I promise to represent you and blame other people and be ineffective in doing anything, but elect me and I'll be that person. Where they should be saying is, Milo, we're not going to get some of these jobs back. We need to think of a broader strategy. That may mean, in the state of Maine, people relocate. Because for every mile you add between towns, for every bridge, for every water treatment thing, for every infrastructure, you're costing millions of dollars. And if we were only more organized structurally in terms of physical structure, more efficiently, Maine could have the lowest tax rate. Maine could have a skilled workforce. We could be the annex of Boston for high-tech, medical tech, IT. But it is our physical structure that the political leaders and the media leaders fail to recognize because it's a hard truth, and it's a truth that makes people sad. The uh-huhs have been running
That was just amazing.
See, I like to get validation whenever I can. But and I'm not putting you or Maine Biz on the spot because that's not your mission to write about big policy things.
Right.
But the more what we're losing is time. The economy keeps marching on. Investment keeps happening all around the world. And capital is what this state desperately needs for expansion. And capital does not come up 95 because a sign says open for business.
Right.
Capital says if we have a concentrated workforce that's skilled, if we have concentrated infrastructure with fiber optics and systems and transportation, we're not going to get there over 35,000 square miles. Mm-hmm. In 140, you just went, nice, like it. But we're not going to get, because 140 years ago, there were ghost towns.
Right.
And the reason why, I'm not using Cheyenne as an example, but if you were in a town and all of a sudden the mine ran out of gold and the mine shut down, you'd have like 100 people in the ghost or in the town. Mm-hmm. They'd be going to the saloon and they'd be, you know, whatever you can think about the mythology of like old, you know, Wild West towns. Mm-hmm. And at some point, they all kind of look at each other and go, hey, there's no more money here. Let's get the wagons and we're going to Wichita,
right,
where there's money. Nobody came into them and said, wait, everyone stay. The good people of Wichita are willing to support you guys indefinitely. Mm-hmm. While we figure it out or make false promises.
Right.
It's natural evolution. It's natural Darwinism, but nobody wants to speak the truth.
Okay.
Let's speak the truth here. We have Donna Broussard. She is the business guru of all of Maine and points beyond. Let's be truth speakers today.
Well, I think that what you're talking about is sort of happening. If you look at the population drops in some of the counties in Maine, people are recognizing that it's not happening there.
You're right. It's happening organically.
It's happening
people
organically.
People are dying, but we're losing time.
And right.
And millions of dollars of investment propping up infrastructure.
I got to tell you, let me just make an observation from my perspective. Remember I mentioned to you we do these on-the-road sessions. So we're going out to all these different regions of Maine. You know, we were in Belfast and Skowhegan and Machias and Presque Isle and all these other places. And we do these focus groups and we say to the people assembled in the room, tell us what's going on with you guys here. What's going on in the business community? What's going on? And they all say this, listen, what's going on here is different than it's going on in any other part of the state. We have such unique challenges. We have such unique perspective. We have such a unique situation here. You know, you got to listen. We're like, yes, yes. And then every single one of them proceed to tell us exactly the same thing. You know, everybody thinks they're completely unique and different, special, unique and different, which in some cases is cool. And in some cases is counterproductive, like you mentioned. And so the parochialness, the sense of identity, the sense of community is very strong to our benefit and to our detriment in some cases in Maine.
Right.
People see what's going on, but they think that this is totally unique and different to them, and they have to find their own solution in some way, shape, or form.
Well, nostalgia is one of our great exports.
Yes, it is.
And money doesn't care. Business doesn't care.
No, they don't care.
Intel doesn't care.
No.
Microsoft doing an R&D thing. No,
right.
Nobody cares.
The other thing that we see is that, you know, people want to, you know, bring business in, bring capital in, bring stuff in. And, you know, you've got to realize your own limitations and your own and your own advantages. I mean, I'm 6 feet tall. You're a tall person. We could have said to ourselves, I want to be a ballet dancer. And we could have worked our butts off to be ballet dancers. But you and I, at 6 foot or taller, we're never going to be a ballet dancer.
Right.
And so I think that there are sometimes people say, oh, if we could get this kind of business in Maine or this kind of business in Maine or this kind of business in Maine. Does it really fit? Does it fit what we are? Does it fit what we have? Does it make sense for us to have that here? What makes more sense to have here? And I think people are just sort of looking to throw it up against the wall and see what sticks. And I have to agree with you, and this is me talking personally. This is not Maine Biz. I think there's a lack of leadership, big time, for somebody to step up and say, yes, it's nobody's fault, but it's everybody's fault. I don't know if you're familiar with the Disney business philosophy, but everybody's accountable. If the reason that that park is spotless, because they don't wait for the janitor to come and pick up the trash.
Right.
Everybody picks up the trash, from the CEO all the way down to the janitor whose job it is to pick up the trash. And if it's nobody's fault, it's everybody's fault. And lack of leadership is key. Somebody's got to step up and go, we're doing this. There's lots of conversation. There's lots of analysis, paralysis by analysis. Somebody's got to step up and do this. And LePage tries to do some of this stuff, and now necessarily, you know, in a – maybe he could be a little bit more, I don't know.
He tries maybe in a clumsy,
some
would say,
yeah.
in kind of an indelicate.
And, yeah.
And it's this wide sweeping thing where
right.
there are some of his tacks – fiscal policies, which I agree with some of the root thinking.
Yeah.
But I don't think he gets there. I think it's this kind of clumsy thing. We're spending too much and social programs are expensive.
Right.
So let's do this. And the whole, we're going to cut the state taxes. It doesn't address the issue that we have a state with X amount of people, with X amount of expense to run things.
Right.
And whether it's funded through state taxes or pushed down to municipalities, which has to go through property taxes and regressive he doesn't address the issue that the cost and the inefficiency
right.
still exist. You're shuffling around the pain and the responsibility.
Right. And what we see time after time is business people taking on responsibilities. If I can't get it through normal channels, I'm going to do it myself. If I can't get a decent health plan for my company, I'm going to do it myself. If I can't get good education or training from the workforce, I'm going to do it myself. There's a lots of that sort of innovation and ingenuity that you see happening, not in managing their business, but in managing the services that they need to run their business. You
right.
see that a lot happening as well. I did the Leadership Maine program through the Maine Development Foundation, and one of the days that we had was a mock legislature. I don't know how they get anything done in that thing. It's insane. You could never run a business the way the legislature is run. You could in one day I was like tearing my hair out and I was just pretending.
I know. The frustration runs deep, but I agree with what you said. It's all of our fault. We all have to feel that. But here in Maine, people often want to simplify it by saying, well, there's two Maines, there's a north, there's a south.
Yeah, that's not.
It's more dimensional.
It totally
in
is.
Some ways it's urban and it's rural. In some ways it's.
It's but, coastal versus inland.
But at the end of the day, we are one state.
We are.
And at the end of the day, both for state reasons, constitutional reasons, and human compassion reasons, we should look at it as we're one state. We have challenges in different areas, just like the United States. Is 50 states, and you can't have a thriving economy in Massachusetts and say, let's forget about Mississippi. And it's
right.
like, no, we're all part of the same country. We're all part of the same state.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge comes from policy. Here is my second hypothesis, which we're going to count. We're going to score it as you agree with my first. And that's if anyone's scoring at home, right, Deb? Deb, are you scoring today?
Yes, I'm scoring.
So we score that. Here's my second. We are a nation of laws. We are a state of laws.
Mm-hmm.
And so from 1 mile from where you're sitting right this nanosecond, in a past life, I was an adjunct professor teaching sports marketing business, and I kind of veered off into public policy. I'm a fan of government. I really am. I mean, it can always be more efficient. Any large enterprise, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, the U.S. Army's bad. Look at this mistake. Or they got a $400 hammer. The IRS sent a check for $1 million to a retired person by mistake. Yeah, there's problems when you have enormous scale. That happens. But in general, I like government. I don't think it should be overfunded. I don't think it should be wasteful. Mm-hmm. But within 1 mile from here, there may be 2,000 elements of government policy, with the vast majority of them good, whether it's FCC stuff, whether it's your car safety, a bag, whether it's zoning, whether it's water treatment, whether it's, you know, all those things. Policy in a nation of laws, and the way that our country was founded in a democratic system, it requires policymakers, people get elected. But the role that we are not focused on, it requires an electorate that's informed and engaged.
Yeah.
Because if we don't have that, we have 917,000 registered voters, or right around that, okay? If we don't have 917,000 voters, or at least a good number, you know, 800,000, that understand local government, understand manager, council form of government, understand a referendum from a refrigerator, understand how school budgets are formed and how property tax is assigned, if we don't have people that understand what county they live in and what county government does with deeds and probate, and if they don't understand the role of the state legislature, then it is the voter, all of us, that are failing. Because if we don't see, you know, my big thing is government requires competency. You mentioned business. You know, our state is about a $3 billion a year budget. It's thousands of employees. You have to be competent. Like, if I fell off the chair right now, and I've used this analogy before, and I'll make it an analogy, metaphor, and simile in one sentence, there which isn't easy, and I'll do it with the right punctuation from Strunk and White. If I fall off the chair right now and I break my leg and my a bone is sticking out of whatever it is, femur. Yeah, it's breaking. I'd be like, oh, no, my leg is broken. I need some competency help. So I'd be like, I think I'm going to need the right transportation to the hospital. Well, you know, there's an ambulance EMT service. They're pretty competent. They've got the right stretcher. I'm going for that. Where are we going to take you, Mr. Woods, with your broken leg? You know what? I think I'd really like to go to Maine Med because I hear they've got some the right for. I don't want to go to Dunkin' Donuts. I don't want to go to Midas Muffler. I want to go to Maine Med. And then you roll me in. You know, Mr. Woods, would you like to see an OBYG? No. I think I want to see an orthopedic surgeon because I think they're pretty smart. And before I see him or her, I really need an anesthesiologist bad. And on all those levels, we recognize competency. The average person in that scenario, as extreme as it is, we recognize the value of competency in service and professionalism. When it comes to government, we don't. When it comes to electing town councilors, representatives, state senators, we skip competency. You know, and we elect people that have no understanding of finance, economics, engineering, planning. And it's like, I like that person. That satiates my personal like or dislike or bias by gender or by height or by anger temperament. And until voters wake up and go, yeah, the person we elect or select or hire to represent us in a representative democracy, if they're not competent, that leads to bad laws, bad policies. Bad laws, bad policies lead to bad outcomes and burdens for society. Nobody makes that connection. How say you, Donna Broussard? Do you agree or not agree? Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean,
we're afraid to blame voters. We're afraid
because
we want to say, oh, voters are, you know, we went to a focus group. We
you
did
know,
this.
I don't know about you, but where I voted, you know, it's like there are three spots. Vote for, there are three people running.
Yeah.
Or there's, you know, vote for one, there's one person running. I mean, that's the other part, too. You know, it's a question of getting people involved.
I know. And getting the right people.
Right.
Because, and again,
But that kind of goes to what I said earlier, which is you want to get people involved. Why aren't the right people getting involved? Because what they're looking at, they're standing there looking up at this big monolith of government stuff and going, I don't know how to cut through this, so I'm not going to get involved.
Well, or a person volunteers for planning board, volunteers to be chairman of local mm-hmm. municipality planning board, which is nice. Then the person runs for town council. Mm-hmm. A lot of time, sacrifice, and expense to try to mm-hmm. you know, export good policies. Mm-hmm. The person selected 3 years in a row is chairman of the local municipality town council, mm-hmm. which is a commitment and a sacrifice on family. And then later on, they decide to run for state senate, and they say, hey, I've been in business for 30 years. I've been in town government. We have some really urgent things to do. And you know what? I'm not going to take clean election money. I'm going to put my own money in this so it doesn't do a tax burden. And if I'm elected, I'm going to put the $20,000 state senate fee back into the local municipalities for education. And I'm going to focus on energy and healthcare policy because, oh, I don't know, I own a number of companies that are experts in these fields, which I think could be valuable to the state government. And if the electorate says, no, there's a candidate who has been in town government for a few years, has no work experience, and has no efficacy or insight or understanding of an advanced way, but we like her better. I'm talking totally in an abstract.
Yep.
I am talking totally, and that's what we like.
Made this up.
It is. That is what we like to call in the business a hypothetical.
There you go.
So if you have a scenario like that, you have more and more people going, yes, I think I'm going to kind of moon dance my way back.
Yeah.
And if you have business leaders that see what's going on, going, do I want to be involved? Or do I want to focus on my own interests, my own company, mm-hmm. my own future, my own retirement, my own house in Laguna Beach? Or do I want to roll up my sleeves and care about a state? We're going to have to do another show on this. I think we didn't even talk about Star Trek. So disappointing.
Much.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. And even though we got off on about 9 different subjects, it was great hearing about Maine Biz. And I encourage everyone to go to mainbiz.biz or Twitter Maine Biz. And I do think you all play an important role in terms of business stories that reflect positively Maine. And I think that it's a great publication.
Thanks. Well, if it's positively, that's good. Even if it's negatively, we tell you why so we can avoid it in the future. It's not just sort of negative for the sake of negative. I don't think that's sort of – it's like, how come? How can we avoid this in the future?
Right.
So it's not all rosy. It's true.
It's true, and it's credible, and it's journalism, which is getting rarer and rarer these days. So thank you for the work that you do, and I hope
you
come back.
Thanks very much.
Great. We've had Donna Broussard. She's the publisher of Maine Biz. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. We'll be back.